Chapter 9. The Moon and Its Craters. The Moon revolves around the Earth and, together with the Earth, around the Sun, showing one and the same face to the inhabitants of the Earth. It can be seen in the telescope that the surface of the Moon is covered with seas of dried lava and with great crater-like formations. Since it has no atmosphere, the contours of its surface are clearly visible, and a city or village, if it existed there, could be seen through the Palomar telescope. But it is a dead planet and very inhospitable. For a half month, any place on it is cold nights, and for the other half month, in hot sunshine. There is no water on the planet, no vegetation, and probably no life at all. The ancients were interested to know whether the Moon had human settlements, but moderns are concerned with the problem of the origin of the lunar craters. There are two theories. One sees in them great extinct volcanoes, the other formations produced by the bombardment of great meteorites on the semi-liquid mass of the Moon before it solidified. There are more than 30,000 such craters, small and large. Some of these circular crests rise as high as 20,000 feet above the plain. Their height is measured by the length of their shadows. Some, like Clavius near the Moon's south pole, are 150 miles in diameter. This tremendous width surpasses anything comparable among volcanoes on Earth. It is therefore questioned whether these circular mountain formations represent true volcanoes. The largest known crater produced by the impact of a body that fell on the Earth is in Arizona. It is 4/5 of a mile in diameter and much smaller than the crater formations on the Moon. As is readily seen, both theories of lunar craters imply a great catastrophic occurrence. For such craters to have been formed, tremendous forces must have acted from inside or from without. If these formations were caused by impact on a viscous mass, great meteors must have come flying from many directions. Bright streaks, or rays, up to 10 miles wide radiate from some of the craters. Their origin, too, is not known. There are also clefts, irregular in form, about half a mile wide and of unknown depth. In the cosmic catastrophes described in this book, the Moon was repeatedly involved. Together with the terrestrial globe, it passed through the fabric of the great comet of the time of the Exodus, and in the conflicts of the 8th century before the present era, the Moon was more than once displaced from its orbit by Mars. During these catastrophes, the Moon's surface flowed with lava and bubbled into great circular formations, which rapidly cooled off in the long lunar night, unprotected by an atmosphere from the coolness of cosmic spaces. In these cosmic collisions, or near contacts, the surface of the Moon was also marked with clefts and rifts. The play of Mars with the Moon was regarded by the Greeks and the Romans as a love affair. Here we have a relevant footnote. Mars had near contacts with the Moon and with the planet Venus, and as a result of these two romances, the goddess Venus, Aphrodite, became associated in mythology with the Moon as well as with the planet of that name. Back to the original text. From the Iliad, we learn that Aphrodite, the Greek goddess of the Moon, was warned by Jupiter Zeus not to battle Ares, Mars, but to leave this task to Hera, Earth, and Pallas Athene, being herself predestined to the sweet work of love. Interplanetary contacts in the celestial sphere are in some respects similar to Congress and germination in the biological world. In these contacts, the bodies of the planets overflow with lava, fertile ground for vegetation, and comets born of such contacts fly across the solar system and rain gases and stones and possibly also spores, germs, or larvae on planets. Thus, the notion of the ancients that love affairs were being carried on among the planetary gods and goddesses is a tale for the common people and a philosophical metaphor for the instructed. The great seas of dried lava and the great craters on the dead planet devoid of air and water bespeak the dreadful devastations, even death itself, that interplanetary contacts can leave in their wake. The great formations of craters, mountains, rifts, and plains of lava on the Moon were formed not only in the upheavals described in this book, but also in those which took place in earlier times. The Moon is a great unmarked cemetery flying around our Earth, a reminder of what can happen to a planet. The planet Mars. The planet Mars, at the present time, completes one revolution around the Sun in 687 terrestrial days. Its orbit is entirely outside the Earth's orbit, and is an ellipse, like that of the Earth, but more stretched out, so that the planet's distance from the Sun varies considerably during a revolution. When Mars and the Earth are on different sides of the Sun, the difference between them rises to over 200 million miles and may reach 248,600,000 miles. From this moment on, as the distance between the two planets diminishes, Mars nightly grows more and more luminous, changing from an inconspicuous point of light to a most brilliant star, brighter than any fixed star. During a period of little more than a year, it grows 55 times brighter. Among the planets, it exceeds then even Jupiter in brilliance. The Earth and Mars approach each other every 780 days, this being the synodical period of Mars. But because of the ellipticity of the two orbits and the difference in the direction in which their longer radii are turned, the closeness of Mars and the Earth is not the same at every opposition. At each seventh approach, which occurs every 15 years, when Mars passes through that part of its orbit which is closest to the Sun, and the Earth simultaneously passes the segment of its orbit which is farthest from the Sun, the conjunction of the two planets is especially close and is, quote, the favorable opposition. These occasions are eagerly awaited by astronomers, for no celestial body, with the exception of the Moon, is more readily observable than Mars when at favorable opposition. The distance between Mars and the Earth at the oppositions varies from 61 million miles to 35,500,000 miles, favorable opposition. The distance at various times during the period of 15 years varies greatly, from 248,600,000 miles to 35,500,000 miles. The cosmic disturbances recorded by Hebrew tradition, one on the day when Hezekiah's father Ahaz was entombed, the other when Sennacherib's army invaded Palestine, were separated by a period of 14 or 15 years, if the figure in 2 Kings chapter 18 verse 13 refers to the invasion which ended in the disaster. A seemingly arbitrary period of 15 years of grace, mentioned in Isaiah chapter 38 verse 5 and in 2 Kings chapter 20 verse 6, may also have had some relation to the periodicity of the catastrophes. The years 776, 747, 717, or 702, and 687 BC apparently were years of favorable opposition of Mars, when perturbations, a regular phenomenon in oppositions, reached catastrophic dimensions. If, because of other reasons, contact between Mars and the Earth in the past is admitted, the combined shape of the orbits, with points of nearest approach being reached at present every 15 years, could be regarded as a vestige of a contact or series of contacts at similar intervals in the past between the two planets, then revolving on curved orbits that were closer to each other. Mars bears a striking resemblance to the Earth in the inclination of its axis of rotation to the plane of its orbit, and in the period of its diurnal rotation. Whereas the equator of the Earth is inclined 23.5 degrees to the plane of the ecliptic, the equator of Mars is inclined 24 degrees to the plane of its orbit, a similarity unequaled among other planets in the solar system. The mean time of axial rotation of the Earth is 23 hours 56 minutes 4 seconds, that of Mars 24 hours 37 minutes 23 seconds. No other two planets are so alike in the duration of their day, conceding that no conclusive data are available for the length of the day on Venus. Is it possible that the axis of rotation and the velocity of rotation of Mars, stabilized and supported in their present position and rate by certain forces, were influenced originally by the Earth at the time of contact? Mars, being small as compared with the Earth, influenced to a lesser degree the rotation of the Earth and the position of its poles. The surface of Mars is crisscrossed with a network of canals. Their discoverer, Schiaparelli, assumed that geological forces were a factor in their formation. On the other hand, he was, quote, very careful not to combat this supposition, which includes nothing impossible, end quote, of the presence of intelligent beings on Mars who could have built these canals. Percival Lowell spent his life in a crusade to convince fellow scholars and other contemporaries that intelligent human beings live on Mars and that the canals are their work. From his observatory in Flagstaff, Arizona, he believed he discovered water on Mars. He interpreted the polar caps as ice masses. Because of the dearth of water, the intelligent beings dug the canals to bring the water to desert areas. In the early years of the 20th century, plans were devised to communicate by light signals with the hypothetical men on Mars. According to one plan, a series of light-sending stations was to be built into a geometric figure on the plains of Siberia. The figure was to represent the Pythagorean theorem of the relation of the three sides of a right-angle triangle. If there are intelligent beings on Mars, some writers argued, they should be able to notice and interpret the signals. If they are not intelligent enough to notice the signals and understand their meaning, we should not be so eager to communicate with them. The experiment was not carried out. The contacts of Mars with other planets larger than itself and more powerful make it highly improbable that any higher forms of life, if they previously existed there, survived on Mars. It is rather a dead planet. Every higher form of life, of whatever kind it might have been, most probably had its last day. Their work could not survive either. The canals on Mars appear to be a result of the play of geological forces that answered with rifts and cracks the outer forces acting in collisions. The atmosphere of Mars. The atmosphere of Mars is invisible. If there are any living creatures on that planet, and if they are endowed with organs of sight, they see a black sky, not a blue one, as we do. The atmosphere of Mars was the object of many investigations, which produced conflicting and apparently unsatisfactory results. This gaseous envelope is transparent, permitting clear observation on the contours of the planet. Mars' seasonal polar caps are products of distillation. A polar cap disappears when summer arrives in its hemisphere and reappears in winter. It is not known whether these caps are composed of carbon dioxide or of ice, whether they are clouds floating over polar regions or layers of coagulated masses. The general questions as to the presence of water vapor in the atmosphere of Mars was answered in the affirmative by one group of observers, Lowell Observatory, and in the negative by another group, Lick Observatory. At present, it is regarded as almost certain that there is on Mars only a low absolute content of water vapor, about 1/20th of that in the atmosphere of the Earth. This is the view supported by results announced by astronomers at Mount Wilson Observatory. The observations concerning oxygen in the atmosphere of Mars are somewhat inconclusive. It is generally supposed that oxygen on Mars, if there is any, is less than 0.1% of the oxygen content in the atmosphere of the Earth per unit of surface area. The difficulty of a spectral analysis of the atmosphere of the planets lies in the fact that their light is the reflected light of the Sun, and consequently it has in it the spectral picture of the atmosphere of the Sun, absorption lines of spectrum, and also in the fact that the atmosphere of the Earth, through which this reflected light travels, impresses its own characteristic spectral lines of absorption on the light reflected from the planets. The conclusion drawn and communicated to the general public is that, quote, Mars's spectrum is practically that of reflected sunlight only. E. Doolittle. This would suggest that there is no atmosphere on Mars or that it is very tenuous. However, there is a change in the distribution of light through the spectrum as compared with the light that arrives directly from the Sun. The presence of an atmosphere on Mars can be proved by another set of observations, which indicate that it extends to about 60 miles above the surface of the planet. Also, its supposed thinness is in contradiction to findings obtained by photographs made in violet and in red light. One series of clouds is seen in the photographs taken in violet light, but not in those taken in red light. A second series of clouds is seen in the red, but not in the violet light. In the present study of cosmic catastrophes, the endeavor has been to establish the fact that in the 8th and 7th centuries before this era, the Earth was repeatedly approached by a celestial body, that this body was the planet Mars, that previously Mars had been displaced from its path by contact with Venus, which up to that time had crossed the orbit of the Earth, and that Venus, the Earth, and Mars, as a consequence, assumed new positions in the solar system. In all these contacts between Venus, the Earth, and Mars, there was an exchange of atmospheres, the Earth acquiring the carbon clouds of Venus, and also some of the atmosphere of Mars. The white precipitated masses on Mars, which form the polar caps, are probably of the nature of carbon having been acquired from the trailing part of Venus. and only the difference in atmospheric conditions on Mars as compared with the Earth, together with a difference in temperature, keeps this mana from being permanently dissolved under the rays of the sun. The main ingredients of the atmosphere of Mars must be present in the atmosphere of the Earth. Mars, the god of war, must have left part of his property on his visits. As oxygen and water vapor are not the main ingredients of the atmosphere of Mars, some other elements of the terrestrial atmosphere must be the main components of its atmosphere. It could be nitrogen, but the presence of nitrogen on Mars, or its absence, has not yet been established. Besides oxygen and nitrogen, the main components of the terrestrial atmosphere, argon and neon, are present in detectable quantities in the air. These rare gases excite spectral lines only when in a hot state. Consequently, they cannot be detected through lines of emission from a comparatively cool body such as Mars. The absorption lines of argon and neon have not yet been investigated. When a study of these lines will make possible a spectral search for these rare gases on planets, Mars should be submitted to the test. If analysis should reveal them in rich amounts, this would also answer the question, what contribution did Mars make to the Earth when the two planets came into contact? The thermal balance of Mars. The equatorial diameter of Mars is about 4,200 miles. When compared with that of the Earth, the ratio in volume is 15 to 100. The ratio in mass is supposed to be 10.8 to 100. Mars is 1/6 the volume of Venus, and Venus is considered to be 7.5 times heavier than Mars. Due to the eccentricity of Mars's orbit, the insulation in aphelion is much smaller than at perihelion, the ratio being about 5 to 6. And in the southern hemisphere, the summer is much hotter but much shorter than in the northern hemisphere. Because of the greater mean distance of Mars from the Sun, it is supposed to receive less than half the light and warmth per unit of area that the Earth receives. And for this reason, its temperature must be some 65 degrees Celsius below that of the Earth, and never above freezing. The mean temperature of a year on the equatorial latitudes of Mars must be similar to that of the polar regions of the Earth. The radiometric measurement of the temperature of Mars actually shows an excess of heat. Mars emits more heat than it receives from the Sun. Does this excess of heat come from the interior of the planet? Mars is a smaller body than the Earth. It has more surface per unit of volume, and it must have cooled down quicker than the Earth, especially if it was released from the nebulous Sun by a centrifugal force before the Earth was, Comte Laplace, but also if they both originated as planets simultaneously millions of years ago, tidal theory. What, then, is the cause of the excess of heat in Mars? The assumed contacts with the Earth would have caused much greater changes in and on Mars than in and on the Earth because of the difference in mass. An interplanetary contact must have caused a conversion of motion into heat and consequently resulted in an excess of thermal radiation over the quantity of heat brought to the planet by insulation. The contacts of Mars with Venus, and in a lesser degree with the Earth, less than 3,000 years ago probably are responsible for the present temperature of Mars. Interplanetary electric discharges could also initiate atomic fissions with ensuing radioactivity and emission of heat. The gases of Venus. A part of the gaseous trail of Venus remained attached to the Earth. Another part was torn away by Mars, but the main mass of gases followed the head of the comet. Of the part which remained with the Earth, some became a deposit of petroleum. Some, in the form of clouds, enveloped the Earth for many years, slowly precipitating. The part retained by Venus burned or smoked for a long time, as long as the oxygen carried from the Earth lasted. What remained forms today the envelope of carbon clouds of the morning star. To the depth penetrated by spectroscopic analysis, oxygen and water vapor are absent. The planet is covered with clouds of dust. Carbon dioxide is an ingredient of Venus's atmosphere. The brilliant envelope of Venus is the remnant of its tail of the days when, 3,000 years ago, it was a comet. The reflecting power, albedo, of Venus is greater than that of any other planet. It is 0.75 as compared with 0.22 for Mars and 0.13 for the Moon. The reflecting capacity of Venus is not only much greater than that of desert sand, but is almost equal to that of newly fallen snow. On the basis of this research, I assume that Venus must be rich in petroleum gases. If, and as long as, Venus is too hot for the liquefaction of petroleum, the hydrocarbons will circulate in gaseous form. The absorption lines of the petroleum spectrum lie far in the infrared, where usual photographs do not reach. When the technique of photography in the infrared is perfected so that hydrocarbon bands can be differentiated, the spectrogram of Venus may disclose the presence of hydrocarbon gases in its atmosphere, if these gases lie in the upper part of the atmosphere where the rays of the sun penetrate. If the petroleum that poured down on the Earth on its contact with the comet Venus was formed by means of electrical discharges from hydrogen and gaseous carbon, Venus must still have petroleum because of the discharges that passed, as we assume, between the head and tail of the comet when it was intercepted by the Earth and in other celestial contacts. Some indirect conclusion can also be drawn concerning the presence of liquid petroleum on Jupiter. If, as assumed here, Venus was thrown off from Jupiter in a violent expulsion, and if Venus has petroleum gases, then Jupiter must have petroleum. The fact that methane has been discovered in the atmosphere of Jupiter, the only known constituents of its atmosphere are the poisonous gases methane and ammonia, makes it rather probable that it has petroleum. The so-called natural gas found in and near oil fields consists largely of methane. The modern theory of the origin of petroleum, based upon its polarizing quality, regards petroleum as originating from organic, not inorganic, matter. Consequently, if I am not mistaken, Venus and Jupiter must possess an organic source of petroleum. On preceding pages, it was shown that there are some historical indications that Venus, and therefore also Jupiter, is populated by vermin. This organic life can be the source of petroleum. The thermal balance of Venus. Radiometric observations at the Mount Wilson and Flagstaff observatories in 1922 have shown that, quote, a considerable amount of heat is emitted by the dark part of the disk of the planet Venus. Venus, being nearer to the sun than the Earth, turns in succession its illuminated and shaded parts toward the Earth. It shows phases like the moon. The temperature of the day and night sides of Venus was measured by a radiometric method, and it was found that there is, quote, a nearly uniform temperature over the planet's surface, both on the illuminated and dark hemispheres. This sentence of E. Pettit and S. B. Nicholson is a terse statement of what is perhaps the most valuable single discovery ever made with respect to the planet Venus. Similar results were also obtained independently and almost simultaneously by a second pair of researchers. What explanation can be given for the phenomenon of the nearly uniform temperature of the day and night hemispheres of Venus? The conclusion drawn was this. The daily rotation of the planet Venus is very rapid, and during the short night the temperature cannot fall to any considerable extent. But this conclusion stands in complete contradiction to what was believed to be the established fact of the non-rotation of Venus with respect to the Sun, or of a rotation in relation to the fixed stars with a period equal to the time of one revolution on its planetary orbit of 225 terrestrial days. Due to the cover of clouds over Venus, it is impossible to have a direct impression as to whether Venus has a day-night rotation or not. The spectrographic data suggest that the planet revolves always with the same side to the Sun, just as the Moon revolves always with the same side to the Earth, or that, at most, it rotates very slowly. In any case, a short period of rotation is excluded by the spectrographic data. Quote, if the period of rotation of Venus is 225 days, as many observers have been led to believe, it is difficult to see how the high temperature of the rotating layer of the night side can be maintained. End quote. Compromise does not satisfy either side. Neither the radiometric data, which suggest a short period of rotation, nor the precise spectroscopic data, which indicate a long period of rotation, may be ignored, and, quote, they will undoubtedly furnish material for discussion and debate for many years. In reality, there is no conflict between the two methods of physical observation. The night side of Venus radiates heat because Venus is hot. The reflecting, absorbing, insulating, and conducting properties of the cloud layer of Venus modify the heating effect of the Sun upon the body of the planet. But at the bottom of the problem lies this fact. Venus gives off heat. Venus experienced in quick succession its birth and expulsion under violent conditions, in existence as a comet on an ellipse which approached the Sun closely, two encounters with the Earth accompanied by discharges of potentials between these two bodies, and with a thermal effect caused by conversion of momentum into heat, a number of contacts with Mars and probably also with Jupiter. Since all this happened between the 3rd and 1st millennia before the present era, the core of the planet Venus must still be hot. Moreover, if there is oxygen present on Venus, petroleum fires must be burning there. These conclusions are drawn from the history of Venus as established in this research.